everyone. Welcome to the JS Online and Packers News Packers Podcast. I'm Tom Silverstein of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I'm here with Jim Osarski of the Journal Sentinel. And we're coming to you from Lambeau Field after the Packers' rousing 34-20 victory over the, who was that again?
Atlanta Falcons,
that's right. Yep.
They arrived. They showed up physically.
They did. They did. And the Packers showed up a little
bit. Yeah, they did.
Before we get going, I'm just going to remind you that this is brought to you by Potawatomi Hotel and Casino, and the World Series of Poker Circuit comes to Potawatomi January 31st through February 11th. Play for a guaranteed prize pool of $750,000. More at paysbig.com/WSOP. And don't forget to see me and Leroy Butler at Potawatomi at the Fire Pit Lounge and Bar. We will be there Monday at, show up about 5:30 if you want an autograph, and 6 o'clock the show will start. We'll do 5 questions and X's and O's. On to the Packers and their playoff chances. I have just looked it up, and the Packers have gone from 1% to 5% likelihood of them going to the playoffs.
Look at you, Mr.
Crowd.
You say Mr. Optimism starting off here.
Oh, I'm all about optimism, Jim. That's my middle name, and as people on the blog keep telling me, I'm a McCarthy apologist, and I'm anti-Rodgers, and...
Oh, I was called a Rodgers apologist during halftime.
Really?
So maybe we balance each other out then.
Yeah. Perfect yin and yang, you know?
There you go. Look, I think last week, Tom, we talked about that this game really didn't matter what Atlanta did. We were curious some more what the Packers would do.
Yes, yes.
And, look, you know, the opening script, they kind of got back on track like they had done, you know, prior to the Arizona game. But really, Tom, to me, the 7-for-13 on third down.
Huge.
Best, I mean, one of their best, if not the best, third down performance of the year. No giant special teams gaffe. You know, there was a muff punt, but you didn't have the disaster.
Nope.
And a defensive, not just turnovers, but a score. The first one since Dallas a year ago.
Yeah.
So a lot of the things that this team hasn't been able to do for the previous 11 weeks, they did on Sunday.
That was the first interception since Breland's last one, right? Against Miami?
Is that
right?
Yeah.
Wow. Sean Breland, the hero of this story. Although I am going to mention, and I wrote my column on this, is that Jair Alexander, even though Julio Jones's numbers are, you know, really good, that was a significant performance by him to be matched up against Julio Jones, and in some cases man-to-man with no help. That guy is their future. He could be their best defensive player next year.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, we've been sort of teasing, I guess, Mike Pettine and then Joe Witt, when we see them, Witt more occasionally, I guess, about, you know, traveling or matching corners and, you know, slowly building to that, I think, with Alexander. You know, it was, well, he could do it. He's got the mentality. And Pettine, I don't know if I like doing it. And clearly they felt, you know, that was their best play. And you're right. I think some of, at least I know one touchdown for Jones was in zone coverage where he had three linebackers run into each other trying to cover him.
Wasn't Alexander's.
Right.
The other one was on Alexander.
Yeah.
And let's face it, there was a 32-yarder that was called back because of a holding penalty. And then
it should have been a touchdown.
That other one
would
have been a 71-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, but, hey.
Weren't.
It wasn't.
Right.
You know, that's why I wouldn't. To me, the significant part is that they have enough confidence in him and they're building him forward for next year.
Yeah.
You know, they're giving him the confidence to cover these guys. And the other thing I mentioned in that column was that poor Pettine, he might not be around to experience the rise of Jair Alexander. But he's definitely not throwing the Packers defense, you know, away. He could have just said, oh, I'll play Alexander any way I want, you know. But he's helping develop him with the way he played him last night.
Yeah, I would say the Packers defense did what they've done all year, mm-hmm. in my view, Tom. I mean, 20 points allowed, you know, it's not – is it dominant? No, but again, it's enough to win.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what they've done. And his guys, we've mentioned Ketcho Brice going getting hurt. Kenny Clark left with an elbow, comes back with a brace on, finishes the game. You know, these guys, at least for him, you know.
Justin McCray?
Right.
I don't know what happened to him, but he looked like he was hurt.
Yeah, he said it was I think he just called it, oh, it was just a hyperextension. Oh. I'll be fine.
Okay. Yeah, so, that's all.
Yeah.
He'll be on crutches tomorrow, right. You know.
Right.
I do want to, just for the fun of it, and Aaron Rodgers made reference to this, every single thing, and this was before the end of the Dallas-Philadelphia game, everything broke the Packers away. They won. Carolina lost. Who am I forgetting?
Washington lost.
Washington lost. Philadelphia lost. And is there somebody else I'm missing?
No, because Seattle and Minnesota were yet to play.
Yeah, which is really the most important one as far as the Packers are concerned. But either way, pretty interesting. It does give them something to play for next week in Chicago, just for the heck of it.
Yeah, and I think of all the games that were left, even if this one would have gone the other way, I think that would have been sort of the last stand for this team. I mean, you know, the Bears are still going to have something to play for, whether it be a bye or, you know, home field, whatever it may be, even winning the division. Yeah, so, you know, I think at the very least, you know, these two games were going to mean something to the Packers. And I think now that you know, once things shuffle out on after the Sunday night game, if, you know, if they move from 10th in the seed to 8th, mm-hmm. look, these – fans, you know, I know there are fans who want to tank for higher draft picks or why don't you rest guys. That the NFL is not like baseball and basketball in that regard. Mm-hmm. These guys aren't wired that way. And they, you know, some guys I think do kind of mail it in. But if there is that sliver of chance, they're really good at hanging on to it.
Yeah. And I didn't think that they played to play young guys.
No.
And let's face it, they've played every young guy they've got. It's not like they have guys sitting there, oh, boy, they haven't played him.
Yeah, I think really the question, you know, when I asked Brian Gutekunst, actually I mentioned Alex Light and Robert Tonyan as examples just because those were guys who hadn't played at all. Well, Alex Light was active mm-hmm. and then filled in for a few snaps and for played. Justin McCray.
Yep.
Robert Tonyan was on the field more than we have seen.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, and then who, Jay Kumerow? And right. Jamon Moore was back on kick return in the second half.
That's right.
Jamon told me that he expects that he'll be doing that the rest of the season.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
That should be interesting. What did you, if anything, notice was different? I mean, what did Philbin say? What did some of the players say about what was different today?
Well, that's interesting. I kind of camped out with the offensive line. You know, oh, by the way, three of the five starters inactive.
Unbelievable for Joe Philbin's
right.
first game.
So Corey Linsley, I think, said it best to a degree where he said, look, I don't know if what happened Sunday was different because it was Joe or because there were three new guys on the line.
Mm.
So he said that's a better question, you know, for the coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the linemen seemed to feel like, you know, obviously, as we said, the offense wasn't going to change. The actual calls and the scheme. But Lucas Patrick seemed to think, and Aaron Jones and Jason Spriggs, Justin McCray, all felt like, you know, to them it was just their playbook and their offense. They didn't mm-hmm. feel they didn't feel much different.
Yeah, I sense there was a little bit of a change in rhythm. I thought that the plays got in a little bit quicker. Looked like Rodgers got to the line with a little more time than it had been with McCarthy. They seemed to have a little bit of a, you know, jump in their step. But from dramatic play calling, you know, offense, no, I didn't see anything that really told me that much different.
Right, and we even, I would argue, we saw less imaginative, quote-unquote, plays in the opening script than we've seen the last few weeks. I think it was more, and then that was always the issue that we talked about in this podcast, was these imaginative plays, these formations, and then where did it go? Whereas it seemed like Sunday it was just fundamental Packers football.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, they rotated guys in out a little more often.
Yes. They went to a few different packages that we haven't seen as much. Three tight ends. They played that a number of times. But, you know, I mean, the bunch formations, the, you know, things like that, I didn't see anything big. I thought they did a couple more checkdowns, a couple of hot reads that we hadn't seen. Other than that, I think they just played better.
Yeah, and that's kind of was the theme of the week. It was all about execution. It's such a cliche. But, you know, it. Look, they said that they worked on third downs a bit more in practice. You know, we Aaron Rodgers during the week, or Joe Philbin both said, you know, the voluntary weightlifting on Tuesday was more well-attended and sharper. And on Wednesday, Rodgers had said he hoped that such little attention to detail would, or an increased attention to detail would result in better execution. And it's safe to say, look, they scored 27 points on offense and a pick six on a jumped route on defense. So, you know, and like I said, no colossal penalties that you've seen.
Yeah. One thing, and Rodgers made reference to this too, was situational football. And I thought Philbin did a little bit more than McCarthy had in that, you know, he started the game with Jamal Williams. And he did it because they had a couple of runs they wanted Williams to run between the tackles. He's better between the tackles than Jones. But also pass protection. Like on the very first play, Williams had to pick up a guy from outside linebacker. And he stoned him and Rodgers completed a pass. I thought that was interesting that he used him to start the game.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because it's just how things, is it different or is it the same? And, you know, and what I mean by that is this. So for many, however many weeks it was, get rid of the running back rotation, right? And then fans would get mad at, oh, here comes the Jamal Williams series. It's three and out. But then you were, it swung the other way. Aaron Jones had so much time, I guess, between the two. Sunday seemed like, I don't know if it was equal, but it seemed like it drifted more back towards, not an equal share, but Jamal Williams did carry the ball. He was out there to pass protect, and then Aaron Jones is also a little more effective, at least than he's been.
Yeah.
You know,
I think we saw a couple of screens that were effective. I mean, a couple of them were bad, but I don't know. Rodgers seemed to play more within himself a little bit. Now, those third down sacks, that's a huge problem. And I know that protection wasn't always great.
It was good enough.
But good quarterbacks, best ones, find a way not to take those because sometimes you can live another day with those. You know, you can possibly go for it on fourth down if it was third and two or whatever. And I don't understand some of those. And I still saw Rodgers miss some open guys, too.
Yeah, to me, one of my initial observations after the game, Tom, was, you know, we were curious what was Aaron Rodgers going to look like. Was he going to come out on fire? And, you know, to me, he looked like the guy we've seen all year. You know, as you said, he'd hold on to the ball too long, take a sack, miss a couple guys underneath, and then throw a BB right over a linebacker's head to Randall Cobb on just an incredible throw. We would see the nimble feet and pocket awareness to get out, and then but also kind of bounce around to oblivion and take a sack. So I guess he looked like the guy we've seen for most of this year. At least that was my initial impression.
Yeah. Protection is so important, and the thing about it is Rodgers is always going to try to string out a play where he doesn't think a guy is open. And that does lead to those third down sacks. But, you know, in order to avoid those third down sacks, you got to take some of those check downs, some of those easy completions on second down, you know, and on first down. And I think sometimes his situational football isn't always the best. You know, he's a quarterback with a great arm and the ability to hit Devontae Adams anytime, and you don't want to take that away. But this isn't a team that's going to score 41 points. So
no, and that's – I mean, I mentioned 27 offensive points. I think that's still important to consider. I mean, even way back in week two, you know, that was a stat we had on this team. They hadn't scored 30. They couldn't get to that number as an offense. It was – you know, they helped get there with Minnesota because of the punt block touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they, despite all the plays' success on third down, you're right, they're not a 20, you know, 27 points is good for them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you're right, they're not exactly, they're still stalled out. Mason Crosby still had to make long field goals.
Yeah. I think the shame for them is that Mike Daniels got hurt, because I think defensively, there's a nucleus there. You know, early on, they were missing tackles, and they always seemed to give up a drive that you're like, wow, that was easy. And then all of a sudden, they figure it out, and they play tough. They play hard. They just don't have enough pass rush with four guys. You know, and they needed that. Mike Daniels was helping deliver that.
He was. I mean, Kyler Fackrell's been non-existent since Mike Daniels got hurt. It's been a couple weeks now.
Although today, didn't he have a...
Well, Clay Matthews, I know, had his first sack since Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Kyler Fackrell had a nice tackle for loss. I know Matthews did as well.
Yeah.
I can't recall. We're going to pull up the stat sheet here as Matt Ryan. No, it was final defensive stats. Well, something's not quite right here, because they said no sacks.
Oh, yeah, so something was wrong in the defensive stats.
There's something wrong in the defensive stats for sure.
Because Matthews definitely had a sack.
Yeah. But still, though, I mean, you know, it's Kenny Clark, you know, I thought played really well, especially with the injury to his left elbow. So it was...
I thought Matthews played pretty well, and I think he's strung together four or five pretty good, solid games.
Yeah.
More than, you know, what people are giving him credit for. Now, the thing you have to do is, I think the mistake people do with Matthews is they expect him to have the game-changing plays he used to have. He's not, that's not him anymore.
Right.
Now he's a guy who'll give you pressure. He'll get some quarterback hits. I think he still can play the run. He's not an elite athlete. Like, someone asked me if he was going to be like Julius Peppers. Mm-hmm. He's not Julius Peppers by any means, and he never has been.
Yeah,
he
never was.
Hustle you know, he has good hips and can move. But as you get older, that stuff gets away. But it doesn't mean he can't still be goes away. So it doesn't mean that he can't do or be an effective player. And I think that's what people have to keep in mind, that he still can be an effective player. He's just not going to be – he's not going to have 8 sacks anymore, 10 sacks every year.
Yeah.
You know? It's just not going to happen.
And I think if the rest of the outside linebacking core, or even if the front three or four was more explosive, you know, that's where the team defense comes in, where all of a sudden his snap count goes down and you're just really asking him to turn it loose in certain situations. You know, but that's not the case. He's got to play the whole game, and he's got to play the run game and everything else. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, the core of their defense is good. And having Bashaud Breeland back was huge, because they were able to move Tremont Williams sort of around. He played mostly safety. But then they had times where they were able to bring Josh Jones up as an inside linebacker, and then Breeland could be the nickel, and Tremont Williams and Bryce could be the deep safeties. So it gave them a little bit of options that they hadn't been. And even Tony Brown, I mean, he didn't play horrible either. He gave up a touchdown at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you could argue that was a surprise start, right? He's the first nickel off the bench. It took a little while for Breland to get in the game. I mean, there were some 8 DB packages that he was not on the field for. And then, you know, made the most of his opportunity. And I just wonder if some of that was still making sure he was warmed up properly, because he's been dealing with that groin injury that, you know, got hurt, came back, and, you know, hurt again. So I think however it was they used him, whatever that final snap count turned out to be, it mattered.
Yeah.
You know, because Atlanta still had, you know, it was Julio Jones, and Calvin Ridley's pretty good. Mosanu's a good possession receiver. It's, you know, there's still legitimate guys over there.
Did you say that Bryce got hurt?
No.
Oh, okay. No. For some reason, I thought you said that he did. Okay. So, you know, looking ahead, I mean, that'll be, their defense will have to play really good against the Bears. Did you watch, so I watched the offensive line whenever I could, and I thought Spriggs held up okay. I need to go back and look at, you know, play by play and see how much the help they gave him. But he didn't seem to be a weak spot for him, from what I could tell. Did you see any?
I thought this was at least off, you know, live speed. It seemed like his most consistent game all year, which maybe makes sense because he had a full week of reps. Knew he was going to start.
Right.
You start from the opening snap. You know, he and Justin McCray talked about, you know, the fact that the two of them have really spent a lot of time playing next to each other. Actually, Lucas Patrick mentioned the same thing with Bakhtiari, basically saying, look, I worked next to him all of OTAs as Lane Taylor was out. And Spriggs and McCray, you know, all through camp, all through the preseason. So they actually felt that in terms of playing together, this was almost a culmination of that, all that extra time earlier in the year when they had worked together.
Right.
So they felt, and then actually Aaron Jones, you know, no one's going to, you know, they're not going to disagree with teammates, but for what it's worth, Aaron Jones felt he saw that as well, especially in the run game. You're right. There were some sacks. I think technically one of them was going to be on Spriggs or McCray, but I believe the bull rush pushed David Bakhtiari into Rodgers. Rodgers backed up because that, you know, and then that, you know, kind of ran into a collapsed pocket there. So
I think it ended up, there ended up being a penalty on the Falcons there.
Yeah. So, I mean,
so not negated a sack.
Yeah. So it's, but it didn't, put it this way. When we've seen Jason Spriggs come in relief, we have noticed him in all the wrong ways.
Right. Right.
Bruce Irvin and you know, some of these pass rushers for the, you know, Vic Beasley, Tech McKinley, Grady Jarrett. I mean, those are real guys.
Those are decent guys.
And you know, it could have been worse, and I know that's not a high bar, but I didn't feel like maybe what I felt like when I first saw those three having to start together.
Yeah, yeah. And I actually thought Spriggs did some decent things in the run game. And that's Justin McCray's strength is the run game. You know, he had a play where he let a guy through, and Patrick had a bad play where he let a guy run right through in pass blocking. But I think when you ask those guys to just line it up and play smash mouth, they're not too bad. You know, there's some things you can do in the run game with those guys. It'll be interesting to see what they do, you know, with Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks and all that. They got a whole week to worry about that. But and then find out whether Balaga's back. And I think they need to find out about Spriggs. And I think they need to probably just start him the rest of the year, because I don't think, you know, as much as I like Brian Balaga and as tough a warrior as he is, he plays through everything, I just don't think he's going to be back next year.
Yeah, that's we actually had this conversation in the press box with Spriggs. You're right. I think, look, if anything, Brian Gutekunst has shown he's not afraid to move on if he feels there's a reason to. But while Jason Spriggs maybe has not been the guy Ted Thompson thought he would be at this point, I agree with you.
But find out. Give him a couple of weeks of practice where he's practicing regularly and then gets a chance to play.
Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't leave him one-on-one against Khalil Mack.
No, because he can – yeah, that's
– that's going to be a disaster.
And that's for anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, even Bakhtiari is going to struggle with him. But the point being is that they got a chance to figure out whether he can help them next year, whether they need to take a tackle in the first round,
right?
Whatever.
Exactly. No, there's a lot of dominoes that fall if the current general manager, and then more so than the head coach, but if the current general manager feels that that's a draft pick that's just nothing more than a backup swing tackle for the life of his, you know, early Packers
career. One more year left.
Right.
That's why they really do need to find out about him. You know, if they can get Lane Taylor back, that'll help. But I wouldn't also rule out McCray. I just like what he does in the run game. He scares you in the pass game. He's got a little bit of making up to do for his first Bears game when he was just awful on the first series. And they had to pretty much change their blocking scheme because of him. That really screwed things up. So he's got something to play for next week.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if Bell and Bulaga. I mean, Bell was questionable, so was Taylor, which is why I think their inactivity was a little bit of a surprise. You know, Bulaga was doubtful, so that was, you know, we'll have to see how they felt about those guys anyway. And it was like, well, give some guys a chance at home against Atlanta as opposed to going on the road in that defense in Chicago.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's going to be a heck of a game just to see where the Packers stand. You know, I thought Aaron Jones did a pretty nice job. He had 78 yards rushing. He got 20 touches. He had 106 total yards from scrimmage. That's not bad.
No, and especially with Jamal Williams starting and getting a little more, you know, just four carries, if you will, but... You know, Williams was out there. You're right. That 20 touch, I think, is kind of the magic number for Aaron Jones.
Yeah.
In my view, however it comes.
Yeah, yeah. Anything else that stood out? What about that fight? Did you you talked to a couple guys about that, right? That was kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, it was interesting. So pretty much everyone that I at least was able to speak to about it saw it. Mm-hmm. And while no one thought Brian Poole was dirty.
Yeah, I didn't think it was dirty. I thought he led with the shoulder. He might have got his head in there.
Yeah, but I think it was more because at least what the Packers said was the issue was Rodgers had already given up and had already started his slide.
Yes, yes.
And the hit came in high. And Lucas Patrick, he said, on one hand, I just chase the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, then you see it's the quarterback. And then Deion Jones jumps on Lucas Patrick, wrenches him in the head. Jason Spriggs gets in. He says Jones punched him. Randall Cobb might actually catch a fine. He's off to the side. He threw a Falcon safety to the ground. Robert Tonyan called Brian Poole a fake tough guy, basically. And that's why he got into it. You know, so they obviously all rallied around Lucas Patrick, and the quarterback loved it, of course. You know, I think if the quarterback would have stayed down, you know, if he did head get caught, I mean, that could have turned really bad.
Yeah.
Corey Linsley and Jason Spriggs both told me that it got to that point. There was a lot of talk up until then. They both said there's some chippiness, some extra physical activity, and Corey Linsley said it was just a little too aggressive, I think is what he called it.
Yeah, yeah, it was. To me, I guess it was a penalty because he was going down, but I don't believe it was like a headhunting, you know, take the court, like the one on Alex Smith in when he was with the 49ers. I don't know if you remember that, but that was like just terrible. I think he'll still catch
a fine for it, Brian.
Probably.
Poole.
Probably. Speaking of plays, what did you think about Philbin challenging those two catches?
It didn't make much sense to me. I think it. Look, I mean, you challenge things that presumably because you see a view, because you think you can win, or someone, whoever's job that is telling them, hey, challenge it. Maybe the Jones one to start, It's a long play. You know what you're going to do with the game plan with Alexander and Joe. Maybe you think, hey, you know, let's buffer him a little bit. That's, you know, he feels he knocked the ball out. The second one, I think, was purely emotional and reactionary.
Yes, that was the bad one to me. That's the one, don't. All right, you lost on the first one. If it's even close, don't do it.
Yeah.
You got to save one of those for later in the game.
You do. So on one hand, you could say it was a little desperate. Like, here's a coach who really wants to win this game and feels the first possession of the game, 90 seconds in, is that important. Maybe that's a message he wanted to send. Maybe he was that desperate. I don't know.
I saw, from my vantage point, I think it was Jason Simmons, and he was screaming at, throw the flag, because he must have been hearing it. Either he saw it or he was hearing from the press box. And Philbin had his hand on the flag, and you could tell the gears were turning. You know, should I throw this? And he just succumbed and did it. But that was a 19-yard gain. Not worth it.
No.
You know, in that case, I did think that he might have put his foot on the line. But that's not the difference in the game in the first quarter.
No. Although it's funny because I tried to troll you Packers fans a little bit by saying Packers burned two quick timeouts in the first quarter. Because, again, it's really at the end of the day, that's kind of what happened. You know, what's the difference between, you know, the offense calling a timeout in the first
except
and
that
a half. Right.
We don't have any more
exactly.
challenges left.
So it's just so the first one, I guess, you know, all these things considered, but the second one for sure was not worth. That's one you just say, okay, we kind of bite the bullet on that.
I think in the fourth quarter, when McCarthy didn't challenge the one in Seattle, that one you're like, you got nothing to lose. Do
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Do it, you know, even though you're going to lose a timeout, so what, you know? And but this one is just like, it's too early. So I do like what Philbin said after the game, which is, we're going to review our policy on on how the, you know, or the execution of the plan for that. So probably a good move. They need to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, some different, who knows, maybe it was Winston Moss in the Fox studios
somehow
got to Mike Pereira, and they were hearing bad information. I don't know.
Yeah, did you see the?
I did.
I didn't see it. What? Got him on the air before the game, huh?
Yeah, in studio. It was a little strange.
In studio?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a little strange. He said that his tweet was, even though he put Aaron Rodgers' name or number in the tweet, said the message was to the Packers fan base only. And not at the organization.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, the only other two highlights, one, which was odd, he broke out all of his championship rings to show how many championship teams he's been a part of.
Oh, my God.
And then the other one is he had actually, you know, and if he was joking, I'll give him credit for the humor, made a joke about Aaron Rodgers has been coaching the team for the last 9 years anyway. And he paused just long enough for the whole panel to kind of stop and say, really? And then he laughs. It's, oh, I'm just joking. So, you know, that'll leave you, I guess, people wondering a little bit. But, yeah, it was a strange...
But that's career suicide.
Right? It was a strange decision.
Yeah, to go on. Don't know who his agent is, but I guess they were trying to get him to elaborate. It doesn't sound like it went well.
No, I mean, in that format, it asked the proper questions, and he answered, I guess, to the best he thought he could.
Crazy.
So I got to call you, Tom.
What a week, man.
Yeah.
What a week. And we haven't really talked about replacing McCarthy, and we really shouldn't. I mean, there's nothing to add about it right now. He did put out that ad in our publication, and people seem to be responding to that quite a bit.
Yeah, a couple of emails asking me to forward it along so they can order it from different parts of the country. And I think he texted Jay Glazier some video of him walking around Lambeau for the last time on Wednesday night. Fox
oh, really?
Ran that. Yeah. So, you know, it's it feels like a bow now has been put on that.
Yeah.
After he returned and spoke to the team Wednesday, and I don't know if we'll hear from him at least until the season's over.
Yeah, yeah, we'll have to see. So I don't think he's going to give a long interview to anybody. I don't think it's in his best interest, unless it's, you know, just one of these platitudes. I love Green Bay. I love Aaron Rodgers. Blah blah blah. Then don't do it. I mean, if you got something to tell us what really went on. You know. So anyway, that's just my little 2 cents to the whole thing. All right. Well, we've gone really not that long, but there's so much more to this season that let's just call it a night and remind you to read all our stuff online. Subscribe if you haven't. Also, don't forget we're brought to you by Potawatomi Casino and Hotel. And this New Year's Eve, Milwaukee's biggest party is at Potawatomi Hotel and Casino. A huge dance floor, the hottest DJs, 24/7 gaming, and more make this a night you cannot miss. Info and tickets are at mkenyeve.com. And don't forget to see myself and Leroy Butler at the Fire Pit Lounge on Monday night at 6 o'clock. And any appearances you want to talk about, Jim? Anything you want to sell? You know, you got to...
Oh, just get there early because crowds have figured it out. You guys are good to see live.
It's kind of fun. So it's really fun to do.
Get there early, order a beverage and a steak or a burger. I like the burgers over there.
I had a heck of a salad there. You know, I hate to be a wimp or whatever, but that was really good. So, anyway.
You hear the Seinfeld, like, just a salad, just a salad.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Go check it out.
All right. And we'll be back with you Thursday on, with another edition of the podcast. And for all of us, I'm going to say good night.